Morning, Saints. Welcome back, Kev, from his big baldy. You're not the only one here, don't worry. No, we're good. Okay, so this morning we'll just carry on with our studies. We're going through the book of Joshua, following Israel's journey from Egypt through to Canaan. So if you've got your Bibles, open up to Joshua chapter 2. And we'll carry on from where we got off last time. Last time we looked at the last verses really in Joshua chapter 1, where Joshua commanded the people to prepare provisions for themselves because they were going to cross over. So there was a 3-day preparation. And in that time, he remembered the oath that he had to the 2.5 tribes. So last time we looked at really how that they chose their lot or their inheritance on the other side of the Jordan because it was really good for cattle. And so we looked at really what that meant and how they wanted to be a part of the nation, but they want to be recognised as still part of Israel, but yet they were quite happy where the land was really fruitful, so their whole perspective was an earthly one. They wanted their inheritance by what the earth could actually give them, as opposed to the rest of the nation that wanted what God had actually given to them. So there was consequences to that decision, so we looked all at that last time. So today we'll go through chapter 2. And it's actually all about Rahab, and it's quite a neat little story, because in the middle of this Joshua telling the people to prepare 3 days, you've got this little story about Rahab that's happening while the nation is preparing to actually cross over. And it's a wonderful picture of God's grace, really, and they're preparing to go over. Remember that this book of Joshua is a book of battle. It's all about battle, and it's all about Ephesians tells us that we've been blessed in Christ Jesus with all spiritual blessings in the heavenly places. It's something that has already happened. So Canaan for us is not heaven one day, but it's about all the riches and all the inheritance that God has given to us in the person of Christ Jesus. It's something that's already happened. When we were born again, we were blessed with all spiritual blessings in heavenly places. It's a past thing that's already happened. So it's a matter of us by faith entering in to all of these things. So when you get to the book of Joshua, it's a book of battle. It's about us walking forward. And there's going to be lots of battle in our Christian life, and there's going to be lots of opposition. And for this chapter, this is the start of it. Okay, so you get to chapter 2, and we'll start. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out 2 men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, "Go view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and they came to a house of a harlot named Rahab, and they lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country." So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all of the country." So the first thing that Joshua does is he actually sends in spies, similar to what Moses did, but on a completely different level. When Moses sent in the spies, it was really they went in and had a look at the land, but they came back in unbelief. From Joshua's perspective, "We are going in. I want you to go in under the battle mindset and view this place." And he says here, especially Jericho. Jericho was situated about 5 miles inland from the Jordan, so not far, 5 or 6 miles. And Jericho seems to have been the centre of the Canaanite villages, and it was one of their strongholds. So in a sense, Jericho was a real stumbling block to Israel's going forward. And this is the one he says, "I want you to go in and have a look, especially Jericho." You could take, in a sense, that because this is a book of battle, you could take in a sense that Jericho stands for this massive stronghold that's standing opposed to the children of Israel that actually has to come down. It's the first thing that they will face. So in a sense, you could take it that it's that just like it's got a king here, Satan also has his dominion and he has his realm. And in the same way that there is lots of principalities and powers that oppose us on our walk, Jericho is the first stumbling block to the nation actually going in. In the same way that Amalek was the first stumbling block against the nation coming out of Egypt, this place, Jericho, is their first stumbling block. So it's the seat or the home or the city you could take as a and the king as Satan really opposing those people. And when you look at this, it says here that it was told the king of Jericho saying, "Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country." So he's obviously got a pretty good intelligence network. He knows straight away that people have entered into his country and people have entered into his city. So he knows everything about what's happening. And when I was thinking about that, I thought, that's so true, because whenever you want to go forward in your Christian life, there is always opposition. And remembering this book is about taking the things that have been given to you, things that you were once afraid of and fearful of, but it's about applying God's principles and receiving all that God has for you in a risen Christ. And this king knew all about them. He obviously had an intelligence network, so he knew what was going on. And when I was thinking about that, I thought, yeah, whenever you really want to go forward in God, there is always some type of opposition to you going forward. And I was remembering when we did a trip one time into Thailand, and normally all of the villages that we would used to go to, we used to take in medical teams and we'd do medical things through the day, and then we'd do evangelism and outreaches at night. And one of the leaders, the Thai leaders, said, "Oh, I think we'll go to this other village. We've never been there before." And so they weren't expecting us or anything like that. So we organised the transport, and it was way in the middle of the wop-wops. And we got up there, and from the moment we got into this village, there was opposition and there was trouble. And we had a team of about 15, I think there was 15 or 16 of us. And we entered it, we got to this village, and we went to the head chief of the village, and they were happy for us to come. But then we had a split in the team. Half of the team believed that we weren't supposed to be at this village, and half of the team believed that we should go anyway. So we actually had this mess, we just had trouble right from the word go. And we actually had a split in the team. It wasn't the best, one of the best things to happen. We actually, half of the team refused to go into this village because they believed it wasn't God's will that we should be going in there, and half did. So they went, half of the team, about seven or eight of them, they got the vehicle back to the city, and I was one of the ones that went in with the rest. And as soon as we got in there, we were received by the people, but there was just something about this village that just didn't want us there, you know. There was forces about that they didn't enjoy us being there or didn't want us to be there, and we had trouble with everything, you know. all our outreaches were an absolute mess. We'd put on little music items and stuff, just everything went wrong. Not one of us got one wink of sleep. I mean, none of us. They split us up into groups into different huts, and everybody was bombarded all night just from troubling thoughts and just, you name it. And it was interesting getting up the next morning and talking to all the rest of the team members. Not one person got any sleep. You just couldn't. You were just harassed and buffeted all night. And so there was always opposition, you know. I mean, we stayed in this village a couple of days, and who knows whether we got anywhere. But I know that we were just beaten around, and we were buffeted, and felt like everything that we were doing was we were being opposed to. So when I was reading this, I thought, yeah, just like this king, he knew all about these people that had come in. He had an intelligence network. He knew that they were in his city, and he actually didn't want them there. So he sets out to get rid of these two spies. So and you get to verse 4, and then the woman took the two men and she hid them. So she said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And it happened as the gate was being shut when it was dark that the men went out, and where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them." Verse 6, "But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax which she had laid in order on the roof. And then the men pursued them by the road to the Jordan, to the fords. And as soon as those who pursued them had gone out, they shut the gate." Now of all the, I love the providence of God. Because here you've got two guys that are sent in to view a city. All they do is go and have a look, see what it's like, because we're going to take this city. So I want you to look at its strongholds. They didn't know where they were going to go or where they were going to stay. And I love the providence really of God, that of all the people that they would run into in the city, it's one woman called Rahab, who's a harlot, she's a prostitute, but yet in this woman, the light of heaven has been shining upon her. And they are led really to a soul that God has actually been working on and is touching at this time. And I love that about God, that it's the, for us, we should always be going forth into the things that God has for us, and we should be asking God, "God, you know what's going on. You know the hearts that you are reaching and that you are touching. Who is it that you actually are going to bring me into contact with today?" In the same way that these spies, they had no idea. They weren't sent to a house specifically, but they run into to Rahab, and of all the people to run into, she's the one, the only one in the city that God seems to be shining his love and his heart upon, you know, and she receives them. Now, what's her reaction? What does she do when the king's men come? She hides them. And what else does she do? She lies to them, and she uses deception. Who disagrees with her actions? Who agrees with her actions? Why do you agree?
I agree because God's obviously going before her. And leading and showing.
It's not self-interest.
No. So is there a time for lying and deception?
Every day, mate.
Every day. Yeah, good call.
When you're lying to the liar, the father lies, yes.
Well, it's an interesting question. Is there a time, you know, that it's okay to... There's no doubt that she lied and she used deception. When we look at the New Testament, I'll just read quickly what it says about her, because it actually doesn't... The New Testament doesn't condemn her for lying. It actually brings out that she actually... It actually commends her faith. In Hebrews 11, it says, "By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she received the spies with peace." So it's saying that by faith, she actually received these two spies. There was a working out of faith in how she received them. And in James, just one book over, he says, "You see then that a man is justified by works and not by faith only. Likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way?" So in other words, what James is saying is that the outworking of her faith was to receive these two spies and actually conceal them and send them out another way so that they actually couldn't be caught. So the New Testament actually almost commends the way that she acted. So did she lie? Yeah.
She did, but...
Can you read her words again, please?
Okay, her words are... So the woman took the two men and hid them. The king of Jericho sent to Rahab saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out the whole country. So he knew that these guys had entered her home. And then she said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. So there's a lie there. As you read on later, she actually knows. And it happened as the gate was being shut when it was dark that the men went out. So she's saying that they've gone again. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them. And then in verse 6, but she had brought them up to the roof this whole time and hidden them with the stalks of flax, which she laid on the roof. Well, that's right. I mean, some people would say she lied. You cannot lie. You know, there are some Christians that are like that. I don't know whether things are black and white. If I transported you all back into World War II, into Nazi Germany, would you conceal some Jewish people and lie against the authorities? It's exactly the same sort of thing. Yeah, good call. And I think war is very different. History, war is espionage is vital in wartime. Look how many nations they think that the enemy is going to attack on such and such a beach when they actually go somewhere else. And this is actually wartime. The nation of Israel is coming in, and it's actually coming in to destroy. It's in actual fact, what she's doing is really committing treason. She's actually committing treason against her own people. She's siding with the nation of Israel, as we'll read on further, against her own people.
And that means she's risking her life.
Yeah.
So she's showing
Yeah. As we'll read on, we'll see how she does it. But it's the same. There's, like in Nazi Germany, you'd be forced with, is there a higher law that we are obedient to? Is there a higher moral law or the ones of the state? You know? And all Christians at times are probably asked to answer that. Bible smuggling. Can you take Bibles into closed countries when you've got to fill out the form and sign it saying that you have no illegal material? You know, some Christians can't do that because they see it as lying. And it's just for them, I can't do that. I can't fill out the form and sign my name saying I've got no illegal material when my bags are jam-packed full of New Testaments and, you know. But some have no problem with it. Virtually every commentary I read on this little passage all condemned her for lying. Yeah, they all did. Everyone I read. Oh, that's right. She hid them. She couldn't tell the king's men, well, they're actually up under the roof. So, yeah. But, yeah, so it's interesting. How many of you guys, when you go out at night, leave the light on, say if you're going to go out for dinner? Why do you do it?
To tell the robbers that you're not.
Exactly. You use deception. You know? You're trying to deceive the so-called intruder that you're actually home.
That's an act of war.
That's what I'm bringing out. Deception in war is a... yeah. Okay, all right, we'll carry on. All right, verse 9. So this is, now, verse 8. Now, before they lay down, she went up to them on the roof. And here you've got, really, her reasoning for doing what she did. And said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our heart melted, and neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. The first thing that she says is, I know that the Lord has given you the land. So we don't know the history, but the light of God has been shining upon this harlot. Of all the people in the city, here you've got the grace of God being shone in upon this woman's life, and she comes to realize things about this nation and about their God. And the first thing she said was, I know that the Lord has given you the land, you know, and that terror has fallen. And she says, verse 10, we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt. So the things that spoke to her was actually the miraculous of God, the miracles of God. And when you look at a soul, it's the things that are out of the ordinary that actually speak to people. The drying up of the Red Sea, all of that is a picture of baptism and death and resurrection, you know? And these are the things that actually spoke to this woman. The miraculous. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted, and neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. And she says that we've really been afraid since we heard about all of these things. And this is the crazy thing. For 40 years, the nation wandered round and round the desert because of unbelief. They were afraid of the inhabitants of this land. But when they get into the land, you see that the inhabitants have been afraid for the same amount of time. They've both been afraid for 40 years, you know. But it's like that. The enemies of our life, the principalities that oppose us, they have already been defeated by a risen Christ. They've already been defeated. But it's a matter of us pressing on into the things that God has for us and taking those places. They were afraid. There's no more courage in anyone. And then she does this wonderful statement, for the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. So you see that she's already come into this realization about who the true God is through his miracles and through his leading of the nation. And that's really cool. Now verse 12. Now therefore I beg you, swear to me by the Lord, since I've shown you kindness, that you also will show kindness to my father's house and give me a true token, and spare my father, my mother, brothers and sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. So the men answered her, our lives for yours, if none of you tell this business of ours, and it shall be when the Lord has given us the land that we will deal kindly and truly with you. The reasoning that she has done this is she knows that they are coming into the land and that the land is actually theirs. And there's judgment that's actually coming. There's a judgment coming upon Jericho. And that's what she's afraid of. She's afraid of the judgment to come. And she's afraid for herself. And she's afraid for her family. And when I was thinking about this, that is one of the ways that many people actually come to Christ and come to a saving knowledge in their salvation. They know, as in Hebrews says, that it is appointed unto man to die once, and then the judgment. They know that at some point there is going to be a judgment of all lives. And part of the Holy Spirit's working on this earth is actually to convict. One of the ways is to convict of the judgment to come. That yes, there will be a judgment. We will all have to stand before God and give an account for our lives. Rahab knows there's a judgment coming, and she's afraid of that. And she's asking for a token. She's asking for herself and for her family to be spared. And many people come to faith because they know that there's a judgment coming one day. They don't know when it is, but they know that it's coming. You know, and it's not a popular topic these days to actually talk about a day in which we will all stand before a righteous and holy God and give an account for our lives. It's not popular, you know. Most people like the God of love and grace, and that's all true, but there's an aspect to God where he is a judge, you know? And there is a day coming when he will act. He will act as a judge. And this woman's afraid of the judgment that's coming. And I know for me, when I became a Christian, part of that reasoning was, yes, I knew that I had fallen so far short of what God had commanded. But the other one was, I actually knew that I would have to stand before God one day, you know, and give an account, and that my life was an absolute wreck and a train wreck at that. And what do you do with that, you know? You got to come to the Lord. Ray Comfort, in watching his videos, I've been really encouraged lately, you know. He's someone who's not afraid to actually talk about there is sin. There's sin in your life, and God will actually act as a judge in one day. And it's not a popular topic. Not popular at all. But it's the truth. It's one aspect of God, that he is judge, and we will all stand. So her concern is for herself. I want to be spared from this judgment, and also my family. She's instantly concerned about those around her, that they also would be spared from this judgment to come. So then you get to verse 15, and then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall, and she dwelt on the wall. And she said to them, get to the mountain, lest the pursuers meet you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned, and afterward you may go your way. So the men said to her, we will be blameless of this oath of yours, which you have made us swear, unless when we come into the land, you bind this line of scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and unless you bring your father, your mother, and your brothers, and all your father's household to your own home. So it shall be that whoever goes outside the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head and will be guiltless. And whoever is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if a hand is laid on him. But if you tell this business of ours, then we'll be free from your oath which you made us swear. So safety and security for this woman was if she stayed in her house, and if she bind a scarlet cord or a scarlet rope outside the window. What does the scarlet cord and the scarlet rope signify?
Blood.
Yeah. Red light district.
Has anyone had scarlet? Because that was the way
they dressed.
Signposted it.
Yeah.
My profession is.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a spiritual life.
Yeah, that's right. Sacrifice. Yeah. Yeah. So if she had to bind this line of scarlet cord outside her window, which is actually interesting, Ellen, because in her profession she probably, it wouldn't have been out of the ordinary, or it wouldn't have stood out, the only one with a cord out the window. Yeah. So she had to bind this. But this scarlet cord, there's a scarlet line that runs through the Bible, that of sacrifice by blood and the covering that actually occurs. If she stayed in her home, her and her family were safe. When she was behind the doors with this outside, she was safe. All reminds you of the same thing that happened in Egypt when they had to kill the Passover lamb. If they were behind the doors and in the house and the blood was over the doors, they were safe. Everyone that was the firstborn was safe, but they had to be covered by the blood. For Rahab, she had to have this thing on the outside of the house, but inside the doors, she was safe. For everyone in Noah's Ark, even though there wasn't a scarlet aspect, for those that were behind the doors, you had the same thing. They were safe. Now Jesus said, I am the door. If any man comes to me, he shall be saved. So all of this speaks, the scarlet cord speaks about Christ in his death and in his resurrection. And the blood that he shed is actually poured over our hearts and over our lives. So there's no need to be afraid of the future, because there is safety and security for those that are washed by his blood. There is security there. So for her, all she had to do was put this scarlet cord out the window. And then you get to verse 21, and then she said, according to your words, so be it. She agreed with what they said. And she sent them away, and they departed, and she bound the scarlet cord in the window. Straight away she does it. There's no delay. She took on board what they said and she applied it to her situation in her life straight away. She didn't think, well, there might be judgment in the future. I might have a few days to wait or whatever, because many people think that. Yeah, there'll be a judgment one day, but maybe later in life I'll apply the things of God to my life. But you don't know when that judgment may come, you know. But you see Rahab, it's straight away, she binds it in the window. And if you knew that your city was to be attacked, that judgment was coming, you'd make sure it was there, wouldn't you? You know, she would have been, it's there. So she acted straight away, which I actually thought was quite cool. You know, there's no hesitation in this woman. You can see all through this passage that her faith, she's got a knowledge of God and she's acting on it continually, you know. She wants herself and her family to be safe and secure. She didn't wait. Verse 22, they departed and went to the mountain and stayed there 3 days until the pursuers returned. And the pursuers sought them all along the way, but they did not find them. So the two men returned and descended from the mountain and crossed over, and they came to Joshua, the son of Nun. They told him all that had befallen them, all of the providence of God, and that God is going before them. And they said to Joshua, truly the Lord has delivered all the land into our hands, for indeed all the inhabitants of the country are faint-hearted because of us. Very different response from the other spies that came back. All they saw was the hindrances and the giants and the high cities and the big walls, and they're strong. They saw every problem. But these two, they said, nah, this country and this land is God's. They're afraid of us. They're faint-hearted. Very different between going in and looking in faith and going in and looking with unbelief and fear really dominating. So yeah, while the nation is preparing 3 days' provisions, this little story's going on, you know, unknown to the nation. But so it's a wonderful little chapter, really, of God's grace. This city's going to be destroyed. It's a stronghold of the Canaanites, and but in there, there's something. There's a little gem of light, you know, that God is actually bringing out. So it's a wonderful little picture, really. And the other thing I really like about this, like, it mentions Rahab about 8 times in Scripture. 6 of them calls her a harlot, you know. And I like the fact that God is no respecter of persons. He takes you for what you are. And I met this girl at Bible college one time. We were, he had sort of talking about how people come to faith. And she said to me, I was told that all I needed to do was come to God as I am, and that was enough to actually win me. And many people believe that you've got to get all cleaned up and get things right and smooth out every crack and every crease that you've got, and then you can come and approach God. But it's actually not like that. You actually come as you are, just as this woman. You can see light and truth coming into her life. She's a harlot. But she's someone that God is actually working on, and he takes her as she is. Doesn't mean she remains that way, but you come to God with all of your baggage as you are, in all honesty, and then he goes from there with you. You don't have to get cleaned up. And I like that about Rahab. She's a harlot, you know, a sinner. She's actually in the lineage of Christ, of all, you know, her and Ruth, yeah.
Salmon or Salmon.
Yeah.
And the child that they had, the boy was Boaz. Who married?
Yeah, Ruth. Yeah, another outsider. You've got these two.
All the way through. Yeah. The lineage of David.
Yeah, beautiful.
Just
as we're going to travel. Yeah. Yeah, well, Joshua actually pronounced a curse on anyone that would rebuild it. They would lose their eldest and youngest sons, I think it was. And that actually happened when it was like 800 years later or something. It actually did get rebuilt, but they paid the price for rebuilding it.
Where they're excavating is well outside of modern Jericho, interestingly enough. It's an interesting sort of what's going on there.
Yeah. Is there any other thoughts in this? Yeah, I mean, I'm still battling with it because, like, how the New Testament brings it out almost justifies the faith that she had in God by her actions. Like when you read James and when you read, I enjoy what you said, Alistair, because it's something I'm still processing too, you know.
Do you know what did Mission Outreach tell the people to do in terms of taking Bibles and places?
Both. Some do what Alistair have said and they would declare and just hopefully there's a general sky on the border who allows it to go, or some will say, no, we don't. But I think for those that do, a lot of Bible delivery is, they believe that it ends up on the black market in the long run, that if it's confiscated, it filters its way through sometimes. Yeah, so... Yeah.
And then there's the bending occasion when Yahweh's actually blind at the people looking.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a man's look.
A man's look. Yeah. Yeah. Can't find anything. Yeah. Oh, very good.